Hello, everyone. This is Dave Goulas, president of EasyDC 3PL, and thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast, where we spotlight small business owners, entrepreneurs, startup founders, and we have real conversations about their journey, what it's really like, and what they've learned along the way. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome again to another episode of the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. I'm your host, Dave Goulas of EasyDC 3PL, and I'm super excited about today's episode. I have with me the founder and CEO of Samuel Hale and Avuv, serial entrepreneur, Michael D'Amato. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. So just to start, and to let everyone know, I met you earlier this year at a conference in California, and I met you in a very random way that we were walking to dinner. And what grabbed me right away is we were introducing ourselves and telling who we were. And you told me like one of the best business comeback stories I think I've ever heard. And it was about how your current company, Samuel Hale, came to be. So if you could just let everyone know that story and what Samuel Hale is.
Sure. Yeah, I've been in the insurance and employment space for since 1989. And I had a temporary staffing agency in California and really was, in the light industrial space where, you know, there's a challenge finding employees. There's a challenge with the California environment for businesses there because litigation rates are really, really high here. And, you know, it creates havoc for a business owner, especially in the staffing world, because you can't predict your costs. You know, the workers' comp rates go way up and down, and we have a lot of employment liability claims here that can just devastate you. And in 2015, I was a victim of some of those. Having been in the workers' comp space for a long time, I really thought I could control the costs out here. But in about 3 months, I had, you know, probably 25 or so claims, workers' comp claims represented by two or three employers, or lawyers. And those claims caused my my insurance to go up by $2.5 million a year. And the problem is I didn't have $2.5 million a year in profit. And the claims were all had one thing in common, in that they weren't real injuries. They were people after they had been laid off or let go of their position, filed post-termination claims, which are non-compensable by law. But in California, we have a unregulated judicial board called the Workers' Comp Appeals Board, and they allow the claims to stay open and really, really increase the costs unfairly. So we set out to find a solution to that, and we found one. That California has a part of the labor code where you can carve out of the legal system, the traditional legal system, and create alternative dispute resolution, which is where you have quick justice and get to the bottom of the claims very quickly. Avoiding all of the legal proceedings is where the money, the savings comes. And so we applied for that back in 2016 and were granted status under the California carve-out. And we launched a business out of it. I ended up selling off the staffing agency and now provide this protection, if you will, through co-employment. So we have a lot of staffing agencies as customers. Most of those staffing agencies serve the logistics and warehousing industry, or 50% or more of their business comes from there. And so we've been able to take this this program and create long-term stable costs for our clients who are in a industry that's susceptible to litigation. And we've been around since, you know, like I said, 2016. And we currently are doing about $600 million of payroll through 100 or so customers. And we've never had a rate increase for any of our customers during that time. Part of the additional benefits of the program is we have a similar protection for employment liability claims. And then we also give back some of that savings to the employees in the form of a pension. So it's kind of a triple threat. You know, we have the increased employee benefits, which are great for recruitment and retention, the protection from wage and hour claims and class action lawsuits, which creates stability, and the workers' comp, which is lower than most. And we give 2 and 3 year rate guarantees to our customers. So it allows the business owners to work on their business instead of worrying about where their workers' comp costs are going to come in.
Wow. Yeah. And that's so powerful too, because you took a crisis, right? Mm-hmm. That turned your existing business upside down. And then you went and you went to find a solution. And in doing so, you created a whole nother business that's been able to benefit so many people. And just even hearing some of the testimonials and hearing some of the success stories with your customers, I mean, that's got to be an amazing feeling when going through that, right? Because I'm sure it was tough at the time when your insurance costs went up 2.5 million. And like you said, you didn't have that much profit. It's like, what do you do? Right. Mm-hmm. You're kind of backs against the wall. And that's an amazing comeback story. And like the thrill of that too, I think, is what we all love when you're facing a crisis and you're forced to innovate. And then you come back like that. That's got to feel really good.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that's been super helpful is I know what it's like for my customers, because I was a victim of that. And so I can speak with them, you know, with empathy. And I think that comes through. And we have just some amazing stories about people who were on the brink of going out of business. We stepped in with our unique program, stabilized their existing costs. And in some cases, you know, over a period of a few years, those customers learned how to leverage this tool that we've given them to grow their business bigger. So we have a couple of businesses in particular that have doubled their revenue size by, arbitraging the employment costs that we give to them versus the businesses they acquired.
Wow. Excellent. Now also in looking at your background, so seems like you've been an entrepreneur your whole career, right? So where did that come from? Did you always know you wanted to be in business for yourself right when you got out of school?
I didn't know anything different. Both sides of my family, both my mom and my dad, I grew up in Detroit, and they, both sides of the families had family businesses. And so it's what I grew up in. It's what I understand. I sold my first business in 1998 to a big bank. It was an insurance business I sold to a bank, and tried working at the bank for a while and just couldn't do it. And, later on in my career, I joined a group called YEO. It's now called EO, where you're around a bunch of other entrepreneurs. And I got to see kind of the link, the uniqueness of each of the guys in there. And one of them said something that always stuck with me, which is an entrepreneur can't walk past something that's broke and not try and fix it. And I kind of feel like that's been my career. You know, I as soon as we get the business going and everything's great, I go look for another problem. It's just, I guess, deeply rooted in my DNA.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, problems are the lifeblood of entrepreneurs, for sure.
Yep.
So, you sold that first business pretty soon after starting it, right?
Yeah, it was 5.5 years. And my dad, we came out to California to help my dad in the pizza business. The whole family moved out, my brothers and mom and dad, and we dug our heels in here. And once we got the business up and running, and I was newly married and graduated from college and wanted to make some more money. And I asked my dad what I should go into. And he said, thought about it for a little while. And he came back the next day and he said, I think you should go into insurance. And I said, why is that? It was kind of a, you know, from left field compared to what we were used to. And he said, you know, they take 13% of my gross every year, these insurance guys. And I can never figure out what the heck they're talking about and make sense of it all. And he said, you know what it's like to sit on this side of the table. And if you can ever help a business owner be strategic with the insurance, you know, he said, it's a great career. It's very needed. And he said that the insurance guys drive nicer cars than I do. So I sat out with, got my first 3 years of training done and then opened my own business. And that was the basis of it. And it just worked out really well. 5.5 years into the business, we had 700 corporate clients, and we sold the business for $6.5 million, which, you know, I was 31 years old and I thought that was all the money in the world at the time. And something very, you know, strange happened, which is I was sort of depressed after I sold it. You know, I had achieved what I thought, you know, every entrepreneur would dream of, which is to sell your business and make a lot of money. But it really wasn't the money, you know, and so I dove right back into, opened another business and put up my own cash and went without a salary for a while, because that is what I found out was what really drove me. It wasn't the money.
Yeah. Wow. And that's a powerful lesson, right? And it's one thing, you know, when you don't have the money, it's like the whole focus is the money. Yeah. And then when you get a windfall like that and you have more money than you ever thought you would at that time, right? And then, like you said, the depression sets in. You know, of course, money is important, but at the same time, like the journey and you know, that's one thing too, right? Like another question I had, because I think part of the reason we all love to be in business is just for like the fun of it, meaning like you can work all day and not feel like you're working because you really love what you do.
Right.
You, especially of all the entrepreneurs I know, you seem to exemplify that, where you're always in a good mood. You're always got like something new and exciting you're working on. You always want to help other people with what their problems are. Is that just something you've always had?
You know, I think at this point in my career, what has made it fun for me, which I feel like I'm the luckiest guy in the world, is I have experience enough to know what not to do. And so I can play on that entrepreneurial game field, if you will. And it's easier for me now because I have the you know, many failures behind me and lessons behind me. And one of the amazing things is this group of people that I work with now, some of them go back 26 years. You know, it's they call internally here, they call it FOMS, Friends of Mike, you know. And so when we're interviewing for a position, they go, is this someone off of Indeed or is this a FOM, you know? And that's been kind of nice. Not just for my benefit, but because I've got to see some amazing people grow in their career and enjoy some of the spoils along with me. So, you know, if we got a big problem now, I can grab two or three of them, go in a conference room, and they understand my, unique, way I do business and stuff like that. And I can use them. I understand deeply what the value that they can bring to the table. And so it's awesome.
Wow. Yeah, and especially for people that are watching that are, you know, new entrepreneurs or young entrepreneurs, you know, like you're talking about with the FOMs, how important is a network for an entrepreneur as far as if they're just starting out to really get out there and meet a lot of people and build their network up?
It's super, super important. And one of the things that I would strongly advise, I know we talked a little bit about this last time you and I got together, is to find a entrepreneurs group. And the reason is, you know, the saying, it can be lonely at the top. You know, as an entrepreneur, you walk in and into the office and you're greeted with a host of challenges throughout the day. And then you go home, and a lot of times, you know, the spouse and the family of the entrepreneur, you know, they bear a whole different set of problems, you know, whether it be time or risk, you know, stress, all of those kinds of things. And the entrepreneurs group was a place where it was the only place where we could go and share those experiences with other people who are in the exact same position. You know, they know what it's like to worry about making payroll on Friday. And because of that, there's a trust and there's a vulnerability that you can have in those groups and really feel like, you know, you're getting some good, not advice, but experience. One of the groups, they had rules about giving advice. You know, entrepreneurs don't like advice. They like experience and they like to get to their own conclusions on the, you know, their own way. But that's probably the most important one. And then the second one is to stay in touch with your customers. Sometimes, you know, when you start a business, in the beginning, you're doing a lot of things yourself, and then you reach a certain level and you got to bring in a management team, and pretty soon you have, you know, 25, 30 employees, and you're too busy working on the business to talk to your customers. And so that's super important that you set aside some time, even if it's not an emergency, especially if it's not an emergency, to get out there and mix it up with your customers and, you know, ask them what's going on in their world, and not just talk about our business, but to talk about their business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you were telling me a story too, because we were at the IWLA show earlier this mm-hmm. year, and you guys were exhibiting. And it was my first time there. And I think you were telling me about some of your staff too, in terms mm-hmm. of where you were giving them advice in terms of just stop selling for a second and just talk to the customers or talk to the people attending and find out what their problems are. And then you told me a story how you did just that. And then it led to business that you weren't even necessarily like prospecting for. You were just talking to a person about what their business challenges were.
Yeah, I mean, you're a great example of that, right? You're in Michigan. We were there with our Samuel Hale product, which is very California-centric. It speaks to the needs of California businesses. But, you know, you being from Michigan, I just was telling you, like, hey, here's this journey that we were going through. And even though it doesn't specifically apply to you, you sort of got it. You know what I mean? You know what it's like to be up against it. And our relationship developed as a result of that. If I was trying to sell you Samuel Hale, you would have said, I'm not in California. Would have moved on, right? But we just started talking about the journey. And I think some of it resonated with you. And then you told me about, you know, your business and starting up and all the things that you were going through, and that just energized me, man. I love hearing about that stuff, and I, you know, I love being around entrepreneurs. And so, you know, it was the International Warehouse Logistics Association. There were a lot of people who weren't entrepreneurs there, but I found one in you, and you know, we had this great relationship that's developed as a result of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now also too, you were kind of telling me you've had a lot of you've had a wild ride in your business career, a lot of peaks and valleys, like high peaks, low valleys. And I'm sure some people watching are going through like some of those valleys right now, like how, because that can be sometimes the hardest part. And especially when your mind starts attacking you with all that negativity and that rationality that entrepreneurs sometimes just tend to ignore. Yeah. So like, what's your advice to someone that maybe is in one of those valleys, as far as like, how did any strategies or methods you use to kind of get through tough times in your business?
Yeah. You know, my dad was in the restaurant business in Michigan. And I remember as a little kid when, you know, at the end of the 70s and early 80s, we went through that stagflation. And he owned 7 restaurants at the time. And I saw him lose 6 of them, you know, and come back from that, you know. And then I saw it again when we moved to California. The partnership he had out here was really struggling, so we moved out here, and the circumstances were much worse than what we thought. And I watched him work through that. And you know, I asked him one time, I'm like, how do you do it? Like, how do you get up and go through this when you're, you know, he's sort of, you know, in the twilight of his career and facing potential economic devastation. And he told me something that always stuck with me. And he said, I get up in the morning and I go to work, because if I thought about all the problems, I would stay in bed. And he said, so I focus on getting one thing done, and then I go to the next and I go to the next. And, you know, so I guess the most important thing is work. Just get out there and work. And, you know, if you run out of things to do, or if you just need a break, pick up the phone and call customers, and go out there and talk to your employees every day, you know, just shake their hand, and talk to them about their experiences. And it keeps your mind away from all the problems you have, you know, and hopefully at the same time, you're improving your business. You know, that when you talk to your employees, they teach you things, or you can, you know, you can help them in their day. And when you're talking to their customers, the relationship becomes more meaningful, you know? And so it's just work as hard as you possibly can. The second thing is, and this is a value that we have, you know, at Samuel Hale, is, you know, you have to be an expert at what you do. So the most important thing is to never, ever stop learning. Just learn. And that took me a long time, because I had ADD as a kid, and the idea of reading a book in college and high school was very painful for me. And as I got older, and you know, this thing called the internet popped up, and I realized you could learn anything you want from Google, and now there's ChatGPT, learning became fun for me. It wasn't about, you know, a test. It was about gaining another little nugget of knowledge, or, you know, being able to solve a problem that's just been stuck for a long time. And I enjoyed that. And so work hard and continue to study and become smarter at what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's powerful too, right? Because a lot of entrepreneurs, especially, maybe aren't great students in school, and the way school is structured with, like you said, the books. So, I mean, it's important for everyone to learn in their own way, whether that's audio or whether it's, you know, looking up things they're interested in. But
going to webinars, you know, getting out and talking to experts and challenging your own beliefs. You know, I early on, I had a partner who had Asperger's, and I didn't really know what Asperger's was, but sometimes the way when we would go in and you know, try and solve problems, some of the things that he would say and the way that he would say it could be almost offensive to people, you know. But I grew up, you know, in a family where everyone was loud and constantly, you know, voicing their own opinion. So I didn't have a problem with it. But we would go into a room, and for the purpose of discovering the truth, we would challenge the living heck out of each other, you know? And that ended up being another one of the greatest things that ever happened to me, because your ego, if it was about your ego, it would just be destroyed, because he was very, very smart. And so if I had something that I was trying to do or whatever, he would challenge it for the sake of challenging it, you know? And after you get over, this isn't about me, this is about the truth, or this is about making the business better. I got that at a very early age, and it's been hugely beneficial.
Wow. Okay. So like you said, challenge beliefs, because just because you think that, it may not be the truth. And then what a great way, as far as having maybe two different types of personalities, maybe opposing opinions, just really go through and talk and find out what the truth is.
It's one of the toughest things for entrepreneurs, right? Because you feel like the business is really yours and it's your idea. And, you know, the rest of the business certainly is depending on you being right. And so it's very difficult to sometimes to accept, you know, something you've put a bunch of time in or a bunch of money into, you know, and you got to be disciplined enough to go, that's not working. The market's not reacting well to it. You know, tank it and do something different, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, another thing I noticed recently on your site, so you've had some incredible growth lately with Samuel Hale. You've been on the Inc. 5000 list for 3 years in a row?
Yep, 491% growth over 3 years.
Wow. So what's that been like? Because that's certainly, I mean, you've basically 5x'd your business over 3 years in terms mm-hmm. of revenue. I mean, what's that been like as far as the infrastructure, the growth, the workload, the team, building the team out? I mean, how have you managed that?
I describe it as driving a Lamborghini with no doors, no headlights, in the dark, going 120 miles an hour and trying to change the tire while you're moving. You know, it's exhilarating. It's exciting. Once you hit a revenue target, you have to set another one, you know. And the other thing is the dynamics of the business change outside of the product and the service delivery, and that you need to start bringing in people to manage the business or manage certain parts of the business. And they may or may not have the same kind of passion that you did when that you used to launch the company in the beginning. So finding the right kind of people was one of the, I think, most important thing. That's probably why we use a lot of FOMs here, because it's a known quantity. They might not be the very best, but at least I know where they're at, and, you know, can work around that. And I know they have passion, you know? Let's see. I think some of the other things are, you know, I mentioned that education thing. You might be really good at your craft, but growing a business is a separate story. It's a separate discipline. You know, understanding financials and understanding management philosophies and things like that. We, during that growth, adopted something called EOS, the Entrepreneur Operating System. It's a book called Traction, if anybody wants to look it up. And it's a very practical way for entrepreneurs to have a structure to run the business on that allows the dynamics of an entrepreneurial business. So that was super huge, because it gave us a structure to grow the company on. And we've enjoyed that one. Outside of that, you know, you're constantly having to figure out what's the right financing and budget process, you know, because if you grow 150 or 200% in a year, the business is very different than when you did the budget last year, you know. And you're always at risk of not seeing the threats, you know, because things that weren't a threat to you when you were a $1 million business, you know, may be a threat to you when you're a $5 million business, you know? So, but it's been fun, you know, it's like the change is what I love. So, but it's, you know, I think for a lot of people, they reach that plateau and they really struggle, because, they, you know, you're growing. And then you plateau a little bit and you think something's wrong. So you start spending money on stupid things to try and get back the growth. And that doesn't always work. So, you know, along with that growth, I think like this year, we won't double in size again. At least I don't think so. We're really working this year at institutionalizing the business, you know, on the finance side and on the, you know, how we recruit talent and manage that talent. Those are going to be big focal points this year, because if we double in size again and we didn't get better at those things, we would start to stress the business.
You mentioned earlier too, with recruiting talent and finding people with passion. I mean, one thing I've noticed too, and it's kind of a concept that's out there now, is basically who, not how, as far as like, it's so much more important to have the who, the right people, than necessarily know exactly how from the start. I mean,
yeah.
So talk about when you're looking for people for key positions as your business is growing. And like you mentioned, passion was one factor. I mean, what are your most important things, qualities you look for in your key people?
Well, we look for people who enjoy the learning process or are open to the learning process. So we tell them up front, hey, part of coming over here, we're, you know, on the bleeding edge of what we do, and we have to be experts. And so you got to find somebody who is going to enjoy that side of it. It sounds, this next one's going to sound kind of a little corny or, you know, obvious, but you have to find people with integrity and people who will work well in a team environment. And I think that's a challenge, because people can interview very, very well. And then, you know, they come to work and you realize that the person in the interview was a fraud. You know, that's not how they are in their day-to-day life. So getting to know people, really, really doing deep, you know, background checks and things like that have been super helpful.
And also, you've got another company that you just recently started, which is called Evolve. And yes. I know that's something you're really excited about. Can you tell us about Evolve and what you do with that?
Yeah. So Evolve was built to address the dynamics of the labor environment in America today. Around 2015, 2016, both in my staffing agency and the other staffing agencies that I either consulted with or I was doing their insurance for, I noticed that there was this trend in that people who had clients for a long period of time, they started, their clients started taking on additional staffing agencies because they just weren't able to get the enough of the right kind of employees. And that has certainly grown. During the pandemic, you know, sort of the kimono came down, and I think people got to see how really, you know, bad it was here. And there's a variety of different issues there. You know, there's this technology, this automation explosion that's been going on across the world, especially in America. And it's brought a lot of value to, you know, to people in their daily lives. But one of the byproducts of that is we've turned a lot of middle income jobs into low income jobs. And there's not enough people willing to work in that space at those wages. And so that's created a lot of issues with supply and demand. We also have the you know, this thing called the gig economy, which, you know, both employers and workers to a certain extent enjoy different aspects of it. But it's also brought up a lot of issues that we weren't used to dealing with. One of which is nobody seems to want to work at the same place for a long period of time. The last statistic I saw, it was like 2.5 years is the average, you know, lifespan of a worker at a job in America. And, you know, when I grew up, the dream was to get a job at Ford or GM and work your 25, 30 years and have a pension for the rest of your life. You know, those days are over. And so the net result out of, you know, all of these changes is there is this shift from what I call a demand market to a supply market, meaning that, you know, when I grew up, it was the boss had a job. He told you how much you were going to make, how much, you know, what to wear. They didn't want to hear about your personal life or any of your issues at home. Show up. And if you didn't show up the way they want, they just got rid of you. And there was a huge supply of people waiting to take, you know, waiting to take that job. Not so much today. Today, it's employers who seem to be standing in line to find the shortage of employees. And so in the old market, the demand, the buyer, the business was the king. But today we're seeing more of the employee having options and choices and voicing their you know, that their muscle, if you will, in the marketplace. I didn't see a lot of infrastructure out there to handle that. In other words, the HR departments at businesses, you know, where they would focus on employee performance and getting better benefits and pension, stuff like that, that seemed to be replaced now where HR departments were recruiting full time. That's all they're doing. Also, these, you know, the staffing agencies seem to be at full capacity and still not able to supply what their customers needed. So I wanted to create a solution to that. And so Avuv, we called an open agency, which means that anybody can utilize the tools at Avuv to build customized solutions for the challenges of modern employment. And you look like you had a question, so I just want to see if you.
Yeah, so just can you? So my understanding too is it's kind of like it depends. It's like a full suite of services, from recruiting to other elements that HR would typically perform, but you can basically use the platform, if you will. Is that what you could call it, as like a platform?
Yeah, there's sort of you know, two big, you know, issues that get resolved that I think everybody can understand with Avuv. One is to be a staffing agency in today's environment is very, very difficult. You have to be really good at controlling your costs. So in California, it's workers' comp and employment liability are just almost impossible to predict and manage over a long period of time. You have to be, obviously, have recruiting capacity, and you have to be good at administration and customer service. And even on the sales side, I've heard a lot of customers say there's really no difference between one staffing agency and another. It's just the personalities that I do business with that are important to me. So what Avuv does is think of it like an erector set for staffing. So instead of the customer buying a package of account management and payroll systems and billing and the, whatever recruiting capacity they have, it's an all or nothing proposition. If that staffing agency isn't good at one of those things, the customer has to make a decision to either put up with that issue or throw the baby out with the bathwater and get rid of the whole thing. So what Avuve allows them to do is build a solution client by client using component parts. So instead of having to invest a bunch of capital in an agency, you can meet with a client, find out their needs, come to the website and customize their quote, utilize a separate employment solution that, you know, in California, we obviously use Samuel Hale, but you could use a different employment solution in another part of the country, or let's say an industry that had specific needs that Samuel Hale could meet. And then instead of having your own recruiters, we have a network. Anybody can recruit on our system. And so for the customers, they love it because you have one agency to service you, which they just want one voice. They want to let you know what their needs are one time. They don't want to have to go across seven different agencies and deal with seven different sets of personalities and business structures. So you can own the customer on the front end, use our systems, which are great employee benefits, A+ insurance on all of the things that the client cares about. And then relative to recruiting, which is in essence the basic product, you have unlimited recruiting that you can attach to that. And so it's allows the customer with their agency to pick out, seven recruiters that they like or 10 recruiters that they like. And if they don't like what one of them's doing or their performance isn't good, they can rotate out and bring in another one. And during peak season, they can send their requests out to the whole network and say, 100 different recruiters, someone's got to be able to find me this, person that I need with this specific set of requirements. And so it's an open agency marketplace. It's kind of like Amazon, what Amazon did for retail and, Airbnb did for, real estate and Priceline for travel. It's bringing all of the employers, all of the recruiters into one forum, if you will, and allowing the agents, what we call the demand agency, to create a custom solution for the client. And the other really, really, really cool thing is we built a singular technology. So instead of the customer having their systems and the staffing agency having their systems, and they might be using a separate payroll company, which has their systems and so on, is we built one technology that does all of those things. So now you have all the data in one place. And when you have all the data in one place, you can create dashboards that are very, very informative to the clients. And the clients can use real-time data and a very sophisticated data to make decisions. So data-based decisions, whereas when you have seven staffing agencies, you're lucky if you can get your bill reconciled on Monday, So that's kind of Avuve in a nutshell. I mean, there's many, many specific applications to it. One of the other things, if you're a staffing agency and you have your own workers' comp and you have your own, technology, you can still be a supply agent on our platform. And what that allows you to do is take your inventory, your employees that didn't make it into your customer base and put them into our network and see if you can get them placed there. So it's kind of like back to the restaurant analogy, someone who sells steaks, instead of letting the steak spoil, you have a secondary buyer for those steaks. So, and there's many, many other, applications for it, but I just describe it as Amazon for employment.
Yeah. And I think all of us can relate to software and technology not working together and doing what we need on time. I mean, that's a challenge for everyone, as far as you have a vision in your head of what you want it to do, and it's not that simple oftentimes. Yeah. How difficult was that to get up and running from when you first conceived this idea to getting the network built and bringing in the right people. I mean, that sounds like a tall order.
Yeah, you know, it I'd love to say that it was a singular idea that I had that just, you know, or someone in the organization had that we just buffed out, but it started with trying to solve a problem for our customers. And what I saw is these great entrepreneurs that were operating these staffing agencies. And a lot of times they were either a little bit underfunded or they didn't have an idea of what technology should be doing for them, or, you know, the challenge they faced in the sales process, because in essence, all the sales pitches were the same. Hey, we can get you good employees and we do good service. So I kept thinking there's got to be a better way of doing it. And we kind of started with a white piece of paper and just said, you know, forget who owns what. What would the perfect, you know, platform look like? And how would these people work together and that kind of thing? So it started off as an idea. We bought a VMS technology to try and run it on in the beginning. And that had limitations to it, because VMSs are great client-facing products, but they don't oftentimes do much for the staffing agency. So we wanted something where the staffing agency could really, really benefit from it and the customer, you know? So we rewrote the technology. I found a really great guy who had some marketplace experience and just sold his company for a bunch of money. And this is like, you know, now 2 years into it, we're probably $300,000 to $500,000 in expense into it, but we were realizing we were on the right track. When we found this guy, he was able to take the vision and in about a year, make it a reality. And so all of the really cool, unique things that we wanted it to do, he was able to turn that into something that we could sell on the street today, you know. And that was so I would say 2018 was when we first started, you know, coming up with the idea. And 2022, the beginning of 2022 is when we start to rewrite it. We bought the first VMS like in 2019, used that for a while. And so we're probably 3 million into it. It's really starting to take off. We started selling it middle of the year. We got 71 customers on it right now. We've managed to land some big name customers too. Government sector business, you know, Department of Defense type stuff, national hotel chain, because everybody has these problems, you know, and no one is really speaking to a holistic solution like that. So people kind of look at it like, you know, are you sure you can do it? It's like, yeah, absolutely. You know, and probably the biggest challenge, even though they're saying, yeah, we can't get the price where we need it to be, or the consistency of the, you know, the quality of the workers isn't there. And I say, well, how about this? And they look at it and they go, they can see the logic behind how I'm going to get better results, but it involves change. And when there's change, you know, I'm looking as an entrepreneur going, this is a no-brainer. Who wouldn't do this? But you start to sort of find out that not everybody in the food chain has that same motivation. For some people, their motivation is keeping their job, not improving outcomes for their boss, you know, or that's certainly in the food chain, but the most important thing is not making a bad decision. And so, you know, getting those people to change, that's probably been the biggest challenge to date. But now it's becoming easier and easier because we've got some big names on it. We've got some, you know, experience behind us.
Incredible, right? And like you said, you started off trying to solve a problem. And the same thing, you're kind of like driving with no headlights, trying to figure it out. And then you got the right person. You had made some modest progress. You got the right person and you just had took off. So,
yeah, it can be sometimes really frustrating to the staff, you know, because buying that first technology and then rewriting it to kind of do what we wanted was a big effort. We hadn't really achieved profitability on that product before. I said, okay, we're doing a page one rewrite and we're bringing in a bunch of expense that everybody's looking at it going, what does this mean to my bonus? You know, that kind of thing. And getting them to keep the faith. And, you know, one of the criticisms that I get from my staff is you're always changing things. You tell us to go this way, and then we come into a meeting next week and you want us to go that way. But to me, it's not a big change because the focal point is the same. And so I call it splitting the hair. We're going to split this same hair 17 more times until we get down to the root of the problem we're solving. And you know, that EOS system that I mentioned, that was one of the really cool tools, that allowed me to continue to have the entrepreneurial spirit, but not, sideswipe the staff. They break the leadership roles into two different things. One is a visionary and one is an integrator. And the integrator is, you can think of as kind of like the COO who's operating the business, making sure the bills get paid and budgets get done. And the visionaries allowed, in fact, mandated to come up with 20 new ideas a month. But the forum that they can speak in is limited. So I'm not allowed to vision bomb, they call it, vision bomb the staff anymore. I have a venue with my integrator who's capable of digesting and filtering that information and figuring out how much of it's ready for prime time versus Mike is just, eating chocolate mushrooms and coming up with crazy ideas, you know?
Oh yeah. That's going to be that's a fun part, right? Of being in business where so many people, when you talk about these big ideas and so many people think you're out of your mind, right?
It is for me. It's not always fun for the staff. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Another question too, right? Like being in business, right? We have these goals, we have these big ideas and we want it now and we're excited. And we think, one thing I've learned is things always seem to take longer than you want and they're harder than you want and they're more expensive than you first think. And patience in the process is super important. I mean, how important is that for entrepreneurs out there in terms of when things don't take off like you think they will, or you kind of get thrown off course and you still have to navigate when things aren't going well? How important is patience and belief in the process?
Well, it's a yin and a yang, right? The you need somebody to step on the accelerator. That's always the visionary, the entrepreneur, but you need someone to work the brake as well. And so, especially as you grow bigger, because the ability to recover when you made a $100,000 mistake is one thing. When you make a $10 million mistake, that's another. And so in some cases you can find someone who's really good at both, but they're almost counter, skill sets. And so as you get bigger, you need to trust somebody in the organization to say, we're not doing that. Until we can do this, right? Until we round the corner in profitability on one product, we can't start another one. And don't disrupt the staff. You know, let them do their thing and go in your idea lab. And, we have one of the things that I discovered early on. If you come into our office, the walls are all coated with paint that allows you to use dry eraser pens on them. So there's the ability for me to just start writing on the wall when I get an idea that sort of fulfills my entrepreneurial fetish, if you will. But short of that, I would want to bring people into a room and tell them about it, right? So I just had to have an outlet for it. So there's probably a dozen offices in our building where there's just writing all over the wall. And that's the crazy entrepreneur, like continuing to try and split the hair but allowing the rest of the team to protect the protect the business and be responsive to the customers and all of those kinds of things.
Okay. Wow. That would be neat to see too, right? With all the writing on the wall and just a big idea lab. So that works for you. So that's excellent.
Yeah.
Last question. So you've had a very successful career and quite a run, and now you're kind of, it seems like you're doing better than ever. What are you most excited about with your businesses coming up in the next 12 months or so?
Well, I think I learned a long time ago that, the money is just a scoreboard. It's really not what motivates me. Every time I hit some kind of a financial, early on in my career, some kind of financial goal, it was always, anticlimactic. Like, I'm like, okay, so we hit that. Now what, And so what I love about what I do now is enjoying to see the growth of the people around me and to see the growth of the business, but give the credit to the staff, because they are the ones making that vision a reality, which is really, really hard to do. And so I love just seeing someone new come in. We recently brought in a guy to do a video for us, and he was a friend of a longtime business associate who, put his son through film school at San Francisco State, which is not cheap, and then it's like, how is he going to find a job to make money off of that? Or is he going to have to go into something completely different, when clearly this kid's passion was in the media development stuff? And so, we've always had a need for it. So we've hired him, brought him on, and I've just watched him. Like, he just got done shooting some commercials for us and doing explainer videos. And I'm watching him like really, really enjoy what he does and being able to make a living at it. And at the same time, our business is really, really benefiting from it, So it's like seeing that little combination of everything coming together is awesome. The other thing is, satisfied customers. Not all of them are satisfied. Certainly in the employment space, it's a thankless job. Nobody ever calls you and says, "Great payroll this week. Man, that payroll was right on." 99.9% is failure. The standard is perfection. And for these businesses, they're employment is a necessary evil. It's not, how they make their money. And so it's to see someone satisfied and especially, like I was saying, those people who've grown their business because of what we do, immensely gratifying. And, one other thing is at this point in my career, I've been very, very lucky, and I've got great family. Almost all of them work in the business with me, just like my dad and his dad and my mom's dad and all that stuff. And I try and start every meeting that we have by, we do a personal best and a business best to kind of, get people out of what they were doing and bring them into the meeting. And, mine's always about gratitude, finding something that I can be thankful for, both in the business and my personal life. And you'd be amazed, right? Like, you could be having the worst day in the world and, the bank's calling and there's, angry customers, and you go into a meeting with, upset. And then you sit down and go, what I'm thankful for is I got a chance to go away with my wife and on vacation. I knew you guys could take care of the business for me. And, I didn't have to worry while I was gone. And all of a sudden it's like, my day is not bad anymore. You know what I mean? It kind of puts everything in perspective. So today it's really more than ever, I just smelling the flowers and enjoying the process. I think I've got about maybe 3 years left in me, and I'm going to try and retire and turn the business over to somebody else and or sell it or do something. So now every day is like, hey, well, you know, I've only got 34 months now, you know, holy cow. It's really, you know, my career is closing fast. So.
Excellent story. Well, Mike, thank you so much for taking the time. It was a great conversation. We learned so much from talking to you. If people want to get in touch, if they're interested, if they're in California and they heard this and they want to mm-hmm. check out Samuel Hale, they're in the employment space and they want to check out Avuv, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
You know, my email is pretty simple. It's mike@samuelhale.com, SamuelHale.com. My phone number is 916-770-7722. We also have, are building out a big social media presence. So, you know, YouTube and LinkedIn and Instagram and all those Facebook and all those things. We're always looking for people's, you know, comments and on, you know, in the social media space. And they can always stop by and see us here in Folsom. You know, so we're up near Sacramento, California. You know, I just want to say thank you for having me on, Dave. This is a great idea that you have. Like I said, entrepreneurs need a safe space and to have a place where they can come and hear other people's you know, both successes and challenges and be able to live in those a little bit. It's a unique opportunity. And so I just want to thank you for that. And I am going to be pushing this out through our social media and to everybody, because I think it's super, super valuable.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mike. Thanks everyone for tuning into the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. That's all for now. We will see you next time.
Hello again, Dave Goulas here. Thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. If you like what you heard on today's episode and you got value from it, please click the link below to subscribe so you'll be notified of future episodes when they drop. If you would like to be a guest on a future show, you can also click the link below, or you can email us at info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. That's info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.